Our mainstream movie culture is in a period of consolidation around a narrowing spectrum of storylines, most of which are driven by masculine action, in which women are largely on the margins, if visible at all. A new film by Vladan Nikolic refreshingly explores the lives of a number of women in New York City, each of which face challenges and compromises that resonate with our own everyday lives. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Vladan Nikolic has written, produced, edited, and directed the new film Allure, which was just recently released on a number of streaming platforms, and I'm delighted to have him on the program today to discuss his new film. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I mentioned that you're joining us by phone from New York City. Allure, this is your third film to direct, but you've produced many others. It's a film that's dense with ideas and characters, but I guess principally it is the story of four women in New York City, a Chinese student filmmaker, a Mexican immigrant hotel maid and restaurant worker, a middle-aged French journalist, and an Estonian escort. All their lives are somewhat intertwined as the film goes on, maybe connected by invisible threads. I'm wondering how all of this coalesced in your mind as you produced the concept for this.
Right. Well, the idea came actually about from a documentary I did, which is called The City, which I shot on and off for a period of 10 years about immigrants in New York. And to me, it was just an interesting thing to explore how people, you know, adapt to the city, because New York is a very specific environment where, you know, so many, because even for Americans, like everybody's from somewhere else, you know,
right.
You meet them. So I'm born in New York like once every year, maybe, you know. So it was, you know, something to explore how the perception of the city changes and how it changes people and so on. So we interviewed over, I think at the end, almost 1,000 people to see if there is a pattern, you know, from all kinds of different, you know, backgrounds, where they come from, social status and all that. And, you know, there was a pattern in how, you know, the city shaped people's experiences and so on. But what struck me was there was another story in there, which was about women who came to the city. And it's kind of also the reasons why they come is usually different. It's much more connected to some emotional reason, whether it's, you know, a man or children or family or something like that. And then something really fascinating to me was just how the city, which is, you know, it's a tough and rough city, but it also gives a certain opportunity that other places really don't give. So, you know, we met some of these women who had these extraordinary stories, and I thought that's a movie there, you know. And then I was waiting for the opportunity, or actually just kind of presented itself, where, you know, a lot of different things came together that we could do this film in a quite unusual way, where we were basically shooting on and off over a period of several months. And the key was to find, you know, really the actresses who would play the key role. So all of we started with real stories, but then we took it, you know, from there and explored it further.
Among the many hats you wore on this film, a writer, but the credits are really concept and story. And watching the film, it has a very improvisational feel to it. I'm wondering, did you write an actual script, or did that just get worked out day to day organically with the actors?
It was a process. You know, we actually, you know, say it's a process-driven film, and I wanted to explore, because this was, like, you know, again, the first time that I could work in such a way, where we would just have the, you know, we would have the basic concept of the character and the basic conflict that she has to overcome. And then I would work with each of the actresses to actually flesh out the whole biography and, you know, the whole background, and then we would improvise the scene. And this is also a process which I thought would be really interesting to see, how a scene would develop in front of us. So we kind of would start a scene knowing kind of what would happen. So, for example, if, you know, whatever happens to this character in that scene, but we wouldn't know how she would get there. And it was really fascinating because, you know, the characters were very confident because they knew, you know, the actresses knew their characters really well. But then, you know, this is why the scene, you know, a lot of people said it really feels like a documentary.
Yeah.
Because everything feels very natural, and this is, I think, because they didn't have to memorize the lines, but they could be in the moment and just, you know, react. The idea being, you know, you walk into a room and you're like, okay, we're going to have this interview now, right? And then I expect what you're going to ask me, but then you ask me something else, and I will, you know, reply, whatever. So this is like, I always thought it would be interesting to explore this in a movie. How can you create something that replicates this kind of experience that we have in life?
So did your own idea about where the film was heading and how it would evolve change as you were making it?
Well, the only thing that the basic idea was the same, and it stayed throughout, because, you know, I would you know, there were certain points where, you know, like, of course, the actors want to take it somewhere else. Yeah. And then I would go, you know, okay, you know, we're not going to go there. So we stayed, you know, faithful to the idea. But they brought in a lot of depth to the characters that I couldn't have written, because they're also, you know, they play the own nationalities where they come from. So, you know, French actors bring a French, you know, woman, mm-hmm. the Chinese student, and so on. So they knew the background of their characters much better than what I would be able to, you know, just write.
It certainly is a very organic feeling film, and from the very get-go, we feel very embedded in the lives of these women. It struck me, too, that it seems less concerned with the typical three-act structure that most films, at least mainstream films, have, and it's more about movement, and that we're part of this stream of their lives, and we just let it that current sort of take us through the film. I wonder right. if the rhythm of that, since you're also the editor of the film, that's something you were consciously thinking about as you were shooting it?
That was the plan from the beginning. So it's almost like you have four short films that at certain points just intersect.
Yeah.
And the glue that holds it together is the city. And, you know, it's also happening at a particular time, which is, you know, 2011, where, you know, there was the Occupy Wall Street movement. So which provides kind of a backdrop and attention, you know, I think, to it's a different story, but it provides kind of this, you know, overall tension throughout the film. So the stories in themselves, the idea was to kind of give us a glimpse into the lives of these characters. But then that once you add them all up, it gives you another kind of a fifth story, which brings it all together.
I mentioned earlier, for an 83-minute film, this is dense with ideas and characters, your film, and it's marvelously executed. You just mentioned that it is set in the fall of 2011 during the Occupy movement, which is a thread that runs through it. And is that to take these individual stories and kind of add a global perspective to them and to the city?
It is. I mean, there is also the other idea, like, you know, you said, there's a lot of these kind of layers of ideas that I tried to put in the film. So the idea was also to replicate kind of an approach of, if you like, 60s type of cinema, which was in handheld cameras following protagonists, and then against this backdrop of something universal that's going on. And to me, it was also interesting because, you know, it has, technically, if you look at cinema, right, so we now have these cameras that are very cheap. We can make movies for very little money. So it's kind of a similar situation in a digital realm of what happened in the 60s with the handheld cameras and cinema verite coming around and all that. But, you know, I felt it's kind of, I don't see, except documentaries, of course, I don't see that much experimentation, like you said in your intro, with narrative cinema. I mean, we've kind of, you know, went into these formulas, you know, where it's like, okay, the three-act structure, climax, resolution, and so on. And I thought it would be interesting to re-explore, you know, and this is why the whole idea of this, you know, the situationism and this kind of protest. And I thought this is an interesting, you know, connecting point, you know, although it's a different time and it's a different protest, but it gave this kind of link to both the stylistic approach, but also this kind of mirroring of these individual stories against the global universal unrest, if you wish.
I'm glad you mentioned 60s cinema, because I was jotting down in my notes watching your film. It was reminiscent of watching Godard or Altman or Cassavetes, all directors that worked in the 60s and 70s, and Godard is still working today, and often working within a studio system, in a system at the time that allowed for more variety and diversity in storytelling. And I'm wondering today, is there any other way but independent production to make a film like this?
I think not, honestly. I mean, you see sometimes, you know, more foreign films who can get, you know, yes. subsidized funding from their local government. But I think in the U.S. it's become really difficult. And, you know, having said that, I think a lot of people are doing it, but it doesn't get the attention. It's hard for these films to kind of break through, you know, because right. I think just too many films are being made. And I think the industry is kind of saturating the channels now, you know, so it's like, whatever, you know, the industry films are everywhere, but it's, you know, although we have the internet and all that, it's really hard to get to these little films. And there's some really interesting films out there by young filmmakers, but it's really hard to find them, and I think to get them seen nowadays.
You mentioned New York City is the glue that holds these character stories together, and, you know, the film is filled with imagery of bridges and subways and trains, these connecting pieces that are part of the hard-wired part of the city, and Most of the times when characters are moving about the city, you even when they're talking, you remove the dialogue, and it's just imagery and this beautiful score by your film composer. It feels almost like a city symphony, and the city becomes a character in your film.
Yeah, I mean, that was the intention. I mean, and honestly, you know, keep being fascinated with the city, you know, but it's also the way we shot it is, you know, with these, first it's black and white, so it removes it from this reality.
Yes.
And we use these lenses and the way we shot it to really make it look like someone's personal experience. So it's not kind of an objective, you know, image of the city, but it's kind of the personal image that someone has walking through the city. Because, you know, I keep saying this, and I think a lot of people will say this, because New York is not a city you can only love. You have to hate it, too. So it's this kind of double, you know, edge to it. You know, what it makes it interesting is the drama that is inherent in this city. You know, I mean, obviously, I'm not the first one to explore that, but I think it really gives you a lot of material to explore.
And I should also mention the beautiful black and white cinematography. It's just gorgeous and fitting to the subject matter. It's richly dark and contrasty, yet the light just has this beautiful glowing within the difficulty that the lives of these women that you're exploring have. The light in the film has a glowing quality that just gives a little bit of hopefulness to the whole affair.
Oh, thank you.
You also teach film and film studies at the New School, and you sort of balance your time between filmmaking and teaching. I wonder if each informs or inspires the other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I kind of, you know, first, I really like teaching because students have that energy, you know, that always reminds you why we want to make films. Hmm. So, you know, because it's all about just the filmmaking itself. And, you know, second, it also keeps me grounded in terms of, you know, seeing, because each new generation is different, you know, what kind of films they watch, what kind of films they want to make, you know, and it's kind of interesting because it keeps you really current in what you're doing.
You were born in Serbia right, and moved to the U.S. in the 90s, I gather. Was it the allure of New York City or the ideal of New York City that drew you here as well?
It was, you know, it was kind of, at first I came here just to see, I already started, you know, as a filmmaker back, I mean, at that time it was still called Yugoslavia, and I came here to see, you know, what I could do professionally and so on. And then in the 90s, as you know, there was a lot of fighting and, you know, the civil war in Yugoslavia and so on, and kind of it was a lot of the things that politically I really disagreed with, what was going on at that time. And so by, you know, circumstance, I stayed here and started working with some of the independent producers, and I worked a lot with Jim Stark, was the Jim Jarmusch's producer at that time, and started working on, you know, independent films. It's really true, though, you know, that you know, this is why I made the documentary, because I felt, and this is what I was asking other people, that this whole complex relationship, because of course it's with New York, first it's the excitement of being here, and second comes the downfall, you know, where you have to realize this is an expensive city and it's hard to live here, and it's, you know,
and getting harder.
Yeah, and whatever you do, you know, there's like 10,000 other people who do the same that you do, and half of them are better at what you do, so it's very hard to, you know, it's very competitive, and it takes time to establish whatever you want to do within that context. But I think, you know, and it takes a certain type of person, I think, to stay here, you know, because it's not easy, on the other hand, you know, unless you're just rich.
Right.
But I think it's, you know, after a while, you know, it's really hard for me to imagine to live anywhere else, you know. And I think that's the other thing that this city provides, is that you don't feel, you know, the moment you land, you feel like you're a New Yorker. And I've asked everybody that, because I think it's just for one, of course, the amount of people who are from everywhere, but it's also the feel that you get in this city.
You were an early adopter and embraced early on digital filmmaking and the new technologies of the 90s that were making it easier to make independent films. And I guess we're now in a new wave, which is digital distribution.
Right.
And you're using all the new streaming platforms to get your film out there. Are we now in a period of sort of parallel distribution, where we have the old legacy distribution model, which is Hollywood-based and studio-based, and now we have audiences who have piped right into their homes, and they need to become more familiar maybe with the content that's out there that they can program themselves?
I think that's absolutely true. I think, you know, there is a variety of platforms and online streaming, and so, which is a great thing. You know, I think, you know, to me, like, there's a famous documentary filmmaker Richard Leacock, who passed away recently.
Yes.
What he said is that it's always any tool that allows you to make films more personal and less industrial is welcome. And I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, the distribution now is really all opening. You know, that was kind of the bottleneck for independence, that, you know, it was very hard to get a film out. Now, having said that, you know, the problem that we have now is really that there's just so much
yes.
of it. You know, so now it becomes, you know, it's not really, you know, I mean, it's not that difficult to get your film out on video on demand mm-hmm. streaming, but it, you know, you need to cultivate, you need to build an audience. So this is something that, you know, there's kind of the role of the distributor is shifting to the filmmaker. So the filmmakers and the producers have to find and reach and communicate with their audience, I believe, because otherwise, you know, it just doesn't, it won't help, you know, that you can just put a film online, but nobody's going to see it.
Mm. You also have to become a marketing specialist.
You do. I mean, it's also, I think, you know, but I think one has to be realistic. And I argue this, you know, all the time, you know, that because people mostly look at films that, you know, if a small film does well, you know, whether it's, you know, Paranormal Activity or Blair Witch, and that's great. But I think the great thing is that you have also, you can have small films that don't have big budgets and can have a much more, you know, maybe something that doesn't have a big audience, but it's important that certain stories get told.
Mm-hmm.
And in the studio system, you wouldn't be able to tell that now, you know, because they wouldn't finance films like that. So, but there is a possibility now for young filmmakers to do these type of films and, you know, not spend a lot of money and reach an audience. And, you know, that, you know, for example, I mean, you know, filmmaker I really like is Shane Carruth, who did Primer and then did Upstream Color.
Sure.
And, you know, it's very original. It's very unique. And, you know, he was able to do this without, you know, big money or studio backing. It's like these type of films would have never been done within a studio system.
Well, and the same is true for your film, Allure. It's certainly rich and satisfying, and I wish I could continue to follow the lives of these women that you explore in your film. I wish you all the best with
thank
Allure,
you.
And thank you for speaking with me today.
Yeah, thank you. I would just say that, you know, so if anybody is interested, the website is allurethefilm.com, and we list all the different platforms. So, you know, the pay-per-view cable channels, Amazon Instant Video, and others where the film is available.
I've been discussing the recently released film Allure with producer, writer, editor, and director Vladan Nikolic. Nikolic is the director of undergraduate programs and associate professor of media studies at the New School in New York City, and his previous acclaimed films were titled Love and Zenith. Nikolic's latest feature, Allure, has just received a wide launch via most video-on-demand services, including iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Vudu, YouTube, and most cable providers. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.